Hey, what's up, everyone? Thank you all so much for giving to our Patreon. Without you, we're dead. We're nothing. We're slugs. We're getting eaten by the bugs in the ground.
We are nothing.
We are nothing. So we really appreciate you. Thank you all so much for giving to our Patreon. Today, yes, we are honored to have with us a whole gamut of people who worked on the hit film One Bedroom. You can find it. It's 1BR, One Bedroom. It is a great, it's already a cult classic. It's a hit. It's a fantastic horror movie. And we are honored to be joined by the writer and director David Marmer, also a woman named Naomi Grossman, who you may know as Pepper from American Horror Story. She plays Janice, and Alok Mishra. He is the producer of One Bedroom. Thank you all so much for being on the show, and we are just super excited to talk about this kick-ass movie, and congratulations on all the success.
Thank you. Thanks for having us. This is great. Awesome to be here.
You're at 86% on Rotten Tomatoes, which I think is like almost making Rotten Tomatoes. Like, I feel like the Rotten Tomatoes became the Grinch and its heart grew three sizes when it saw this movie. And because it's the harshest freaking place on earth.
Also, I just realized that you are petting a cat in your screen because it did look like a big orange hairy, like just a butt. That was there for a second. Yes.
For a while, he does like to stick his butt in the camera.
Welcome to Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Anything helps. I wanted to talk about it because
I'm just so happy that you're petting a cat and not doing what Jeffrey Toobin was doing on Zoom. We are doing really good here. All right. Let's see.
Both hands, everybody.
Both hands. Everyone show your hands on Zoom. Hand check. Naomi did not show her hands. Note.
When I pet my pussy on camera, it's on OnlyFans. Okay.
It's for real money. Now, speaking of real money, indie filmmaking. That's where the real money is, and we all know it. We know that all of this, I'm going to say straight up, I know for a fact that this was some sort of money laundering system. I mean, I don't know what has happened here, but I'm glad that money laundering worked for 1BR because it's such a good movie, and I first saw it just because, you know, my wife and I are the type of people that we see every horror movie that comes out. Like, I'm a person that I'll see all of it. Even if it's bad, I like to watch it. And when this came out, it was such a pleasant surprise because, number one, it's good old-fashioned, like, hardcore, very scary. Like, purposefully dreadful. I like its very dark undertone. And number two, it struck me in a place where I felt very vulnerable because it reminded me of my first times of coming to Los Angeles for pilot season. Right. And Los Angeles, if you don't know what I mean, you know, great beaches, Mexican food, at sweet, sweet, sweet legal weed. But it's a place filled with vipers and cults.
So yes, so let's talk about that. So for those that haven't seen the film yet, but basically it's an examination of the normalcy gone completely awry. It's basically an examination of what is normal. Everyone has this suburban view of this is the perfect life, but in reality, indeed, perfection is something not easily found, and often it can become horrific, which is what you play with in this story. So let's just start with you, David, as the writer and the director. How did you come up with this idea to examine sort of what our ideas of normalcy are, and then sort of to take a look at the darkness that resides in suburbs all over this world?
Well, I mean, it started really in a similar place to what Henry was talking about, which was that I moved to LA when I was in my early 20s. And it was, you know, I was very similar to how Sarah, the protagonist in the movie, you know, is at the top. I was, you know, I felt very out of place. I felt very vulnerable. I didn't know anybody. I was not a confident person, you know, and you wash up in LA and it's just a sea of humanity. And you know, I lived in an apartment complex that was really similar to the one in the movie.
So you were one flyer away from joining the Manson family. It was just one strange bus stop conversation away.
Yeah, that's exactly why 1BR works, is because I also lived in the same apartment complex where it's like,
yeah,
why is everyone saying hello to me? Number one, because I'm from New York, so I don't like when strangers speak to me. But it's strange because then you realize, like, oh, it's all like these series of honey traps.
They could have just been nice to you, Henry, as well. They can also just be nice sometimes.
Yeah, but it's a super weird environment. Like, you know, it looks very normal, but you know, you're waving to these people on the breezeway, and I never knew any of their names. You know, it never goes beyond a wave, and so you're living right. sort of packed in with outwardly friendly strangers,
right?
And you don't know what's going on behind their walls. And I remember my first night at that apartment complex. I set up my bed and I, you know, went to bed for the night. And then, you know, was just drifting off, and I heard these loud thumping footsteps going across the ceiling above me. Yeah. And they just went back and forth for hours. And I remember just like staring at the ceiling in the dark and going like, jeez, I'm never going to sleep again. Like, what have I done? You know, right. And it just, that sort of, there was just something so, there's something so alienating about that environment. And it just was, it was scary. And it was something I felt like I hadn't seen in horror. You know, it's not a horror of sort of dark corners or the supernatural. It's right. like, it's the horror of the normal and the horror of, you know, just everyday life. And there was something I wanted to capture about it.
Have any one of you ever fallen into one of these accidental LA cults? Like, they are, I was doing yoga at a house for a while that was near
my
house.
That is not good.
No, but I was going to this place and it was really, really nice. And I kept being like, my wife and I were like, what? Oh, this is so nice. They did this like these cannabis rituals where they teach old people how to smoke weed by blowing aww. Weed in their face. It was kind of very nice. But
what are they, dogs on their deathbed? What's
they
going on?
Live in that house. And at some point I was like, is this like a cult? Like, I was just like joking around, and the woman's like, ha 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 ha, if it is indeed a cult, it is a friendly one. And I was like, oh, oh.
So
aren't they all friendly
funny
ones
you
to begin?
Say yeah. that because yeah. I am in a yoga cult. I don't mm-hmm. live yeah. there, but I'm going there from here. I, you know, I'll be going there after.
yeah, you are yeah. full workout
Naomi
gear.
Is ready to go. She's ready to work out. One of us has to be ready to work out just statistically. So I'm very happy it's you. So I'm just going to ask this to everybody. Again, Alok Mishra, David Marmer, and Naomi Grossman. You know, when it comes to this as a trope in horror, you know, we have the Stepford Wives. We have Rosemary's Baby, movies like Get Out. The idea of examining what is supposed to be safe, what is a smile, what's behind it. What are your thoughts on just sort of why that is so captivating for us as a culture, especially here in America, where we were sold this bill of goods about what the American dream is, what is life supposed to be? And then I think slowly people realized this is kind of much darker than I was told. Why do you think that trope continues to be so relevant? Naomi.
Oh, gosh. Well,
I choose you. I choose you. Also, if you look at the 74 million people that voted for Trump as well, so you can kind of see the same thing.
Yeah, there's that. I think, let's face it, it's super relatable. We all leave our house, or at least we used to, and, you know, say hello to our neighbor, and you just don't know who that person is.
Right.
I mean, Henry's not wrong about, you know, they say the difference in New York, they say F you and they mean hello. And then in right. LA, they say hello and it means F you.
Right.
And it's true. It's a weird place. But regardless of whether it's LA or New York or anywhere in the world, yeah. you don't necessarily know your neighbor.
No. Right.
And that's something
and I don't
definitely.
Know.
right.
no. I don't want to know them. I'm afraid to engage.
Right. Yeah.
You got to be careful, especially in as actors, because how many times have I covered? We covered cult after cult after cult.
My God.
You got the last batch was the Nexium cult in upstate New York, and it was all actors. And there's something about
yep.
fucking, it's between Nexium, it's these self-help groups that kind of, you get into these acting scenarios. The first levels of Scientology, where you sit there and the whole job is like, you know, the one common example is like they put an ashtray in a chair and your job is to go scream at this ashtray and say, get out of this chair, ashtray, get out of this chair. And then a coach stands next to you and going, I don't believe you. Every single time it is. And I was like, I did that class at Florida State in acting. That's an acting class.
Well, and yeah. you know, Nexium was definitely a cult, and you know the power of cults because they truly believed the new Babylon was going to be in Albany, ooh. New York. You know how brainwashed you have to be to believe that? That's the next level insanity.
Yeah.
Well, I think actors, though, especially, are really susceptible to this kind of thing. Like, we're hungry. We, you know, we need something to believe in.
Right. We're empty vessels.
We got time on our hands.
We're waiting for people to pour shit into us.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think that's why LA especially has such a rich culture of cults. There's so many, you know, creatives that come from different places, like, and just need something to believe in. I mean, right. David is a total, he's an expert on this, so I'll let him take that away.
Please. Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, I do. I think Naomi's exactly right about LA being like a sort of a good incubator for right. cults because of exactly that. I think people who come to LA, you know, following a dream, whether it be acting or filmmaking or whatever, music, you know, they tend to be people who are searching for something, who are looking for some kind of transcendence or some kind of, you know, something big. They're dreamers. And I think that it makes them vulnerable, you know, especially when you get here. And as I did, you know, you get here with a big dream and you're like, I'm going to make it happen. And then you see that you are surrounded by 8 million people who also want to make it happen and more arriving every day. And you know, you blink once and suddenly everybody's 10 years younger than you. And you're like, what is, you know, and I can see that like, as it's not happening for you, like you are looking for just something to grab onto to a lifeline.
Well, and David, I do want to congratulate you for finally making it. You are talking with Ben and Henry, a combined weight of 530 pounds.
Congrats.
Really powerful. This is a great career highlight for everybody
involved. We've arrived.
Hey, David, can I ask, this was your first like full-length film, right?
Yes.
And how was it? Because I want to make one.
So
and
smooth.
It sounds like it's really difficult.
David, can you just lie to him and tell him it was so easy? I can't have him more stressed out. Just tell him it was the smoothest thing ever.
It's so smooth. It's so smooth. It's easy. You don't need very much money. Like, the less money you have, the easier it is.
Wow.
Nothing will go wrong.
Okay.
Shoot in as few days as possible. Try to shoot as many script pages as you can in a day. Anything you want to add, Alok? Like, I mean, it was super easy.
I mean, so easy.
This is inspiring.
I mean, why not go ahead and like, you know, mortgage your already paid off house?
Hell yeah.
Just do it. Well, okay. What could go wrong? Yeah, man. I'm telling you, it's amazing.
Like, and just let it ride.
For the audience that doesn't understand, that was all satire. Your building almost caught on fire. We saw, this is correct, your office almost caught on fire. There was a police chase at one point or a runaway vehicle at some point. Mm-hmm. It basically seemed like your movie was cursed from the beginning.
Yeah.
Well, some people say it's a movie within a movie.
Honestly.
All the disasters that occurred. I mean, very sort of like, I don't know, Spinal Tap-esque in some ways. But like, despite, you know, the fires that, you know, we had in 2017 right on Mulholland that looked like Mordor or something.
It was crazy.
Yeah, that's when the shit was going down. And our office was on the other side from the Getty. And so it was a thing where we didn't even know if the office had burned down or not. And they wouldn't let us go over there because we're trying to check Google Earth to see if we could see anything.
Oh my God.
Because there was just like a shock thing of like white smoke just like, you know, over the building. You couldn't see it. But the thing was, it was right next to the veterans' graveyard over there. So you knew they weren't going to let that shit burn down.
They're going to try
it. Oh, my God.
They'll save that building.
Can
they'll
you imagine?
They were just like, and it was also Bel Air. So they're just bringing planes in and like, you know. So we knew that it was in trouble, but we didn't think it would maybe necessarily burn down. And it didn't. We just moved the office to my house like for a week. But it was happening during our pre-production.
Oh, my God.
The other thing, the big thing, one of the big things was that we had a production truck that got stolen from in front of this office that hadn't burned down in the middle of the night. And then that truck was involved in a high speed televised chase.
Cool.
And they catch the guy near the Felix sign. Cause he tries to gun it and get away. And we have a PA who's sleeping in the middle truck. They steal the first truck. This guy's PA gets out of the truck, gets in his own car and like Fast and the Furious style, like chases this dude down.
But
Okay,
he's not, but hold on. He's trailing him. He's not trying to catch him or like, you know, bump the truck off the road or anything crazy. He's on the phone with the police, who are in turn saying, "Oh, sir, you need to stand down." And he's like, "I won't stand down. I won't stand down until you get behind this truck." And
yeah, so he finally,
it was like a like helicopter light goes on the truck, and like three cop cars rush in, and this guy tries to get away, and you know, fucks up the engine, and you know, with the pay like a deductible for this, and but then pull him out, and he is. Naomi, would you say it?
Oh, he's a hot felon.
Woo! All right.
Oh, no.
We know it needs to be a movie within a movie, because this guy needs to play himself. He was like Brad Pitt, beautiful.
Wow.
And let me tell you, the cops were not roughing this pretty boy up.
No, they weren't. Like, you think they would, but yeah. No.
You know, for all we know, this might have been where this guy landed after his acting career didn't pan out.
Sure, I mean, that's Los Angeles. You have to hustle.
Yeah.
It turned out that this was a truck stealing ring, and they had never been caught before. And
this guy
was new to the ring. So he turned over on them and turned the state's evidence. And he's supposed to pay us restitution, but we've never seen a fucking dime. I can tell you that.
We need to get him a role so he gets some money.
I was pictured part of his parole would be something like he'd have to be our monkey butler, or he'd have to be some sort of like PA on set who maybe would get a part in the movie. And since, you know, I'm not spoiling anything for you guys. I'm assuming everyone's watched the movie at this point.
Yeah.
But, you know, Janice isn't dead. Janice might need a new love interest. I mean, it could be, you know, 1BR part 2, Janice's Awakening, The Chronicles of Janice.
2BR.
Or Naomi. I mean, he can pet my pussy on my OnlyFans. Okay.
Absolutely. Well, I would love to see him steal a truck and go do a whole series of things.
But you give that PA like an associate producer credit?
he got a Target gift card.
Well, that's great. That's very nice.
Let's correct this. Let's correct this here. We asked him, "What would you like? Can we get you a bottle of alcohol, something like that? You know, nice bottle of alcohol." He's like, no. I just want my gift certificates. And I'm like, can we at least get you In-N-Out? And he's like, no, he wants McDonald's. And I was like, well, the heart wants what the heart wants. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
You had one wish. He had one wish.
I was going to say, that was one of the disasters. And the other disaster that we sometimes talk about was that, you know, we were shooting on a Thursday. It's Monday. And that day, we get a call. We lost our three leads in one day.
Oh, my God.
So the person that you see playing Sarah, Nicole Bridenbloom, and Brian Giles Matty, and Miss Stanhope, Susan Davis, they were not cast like 3 days before shooting the film. And what happened was that, as you do as independent producers, like our original actress, who we cannot talk about because of libel and such things, she wanted some sort of like high-end feminine energy drink, and we couldn't find this drink except for like the Gelson's in Marina Del Rey. So we had to go pick this up, and while we were there picking it up, her agent called and said, "She's out." No reason why, but she's just out. And then what happens is like, and this is a fun factor, a fun thing not to do as you know, producers and filmmakers in the future. Don't hire the friend or boyfriend of like your lead actress. We don't know what's what, but this dude we hired for the Brian character was like on some shitty CW vampire show that we've never watched. But we thought, hey, it's you know, they're gonna put us in the black right away, and we're like money grubbing producers. Of course, we're like, yes, we'll do it. You know? So not only is she out while we're getting this feminine energy drink, and by the way, I begged the manager to go back in the back and look for some more because we didn't have quite enough to make it through the 3 days before we were getting a big shipment from the actual maker of this energy drink.
What is this energy drink? I drink Diet Rockstar. Is it Diet Rockstar?
No.
I can't say, because the reason I can't say is because they sent us a whole bunch of it, like for free, and we can't shit on them because of that.
No. I'm not shitting on it. Yeah, that's very good that they sent you the free. That's very insane, though.
I mean, so we had sent the manager in the back while we heard this news, and the manager came back and was like, I found another case. And we're like, we don't need it. so she drops out.
I love that you just turned into John Lovitz. Just be like, get it back. We don't need it. It stinks.
Exactly. So the end of the story. End of the story was that we went, of course, to the bar to try to figure this out because we've lost two people thus far. What can we do? How can we regroup? Then we get a call that the lady who was supposed to play Miss Stanhope, her husband has collapsed, rushed to the hospital, and now he's dead. So now she's out too. So we were just like so messed up as to how we were going to get this back. But the good news was is that Nicole Bryden Bloom was actually always our first choice. And actually, you know, David was fighting very hard for her when we got this other actress who was like a known TV actress and the whole thing. We literally had to corner poor David and be like, this has to be. We're in the back. We're in the back. You know? So, so he begrudgingly agreed with us. And we flew him up to, you know, wherever, you know, in Canada she was shooting her show to rehearse with her. And so, you know, he got more comfortable with it in that situation. But anyway, to fast forward the story, we didn't actually cast, we moved the whole production back a week to the next Monday, and we got Nicole to come out almost immediately. Like, she flew out two days later, and she got 3 hours to rehearse with David, period. And then, then we're sitting there on Friday, and we still haven't cast the Brian character nor the Miss Stanhope character. And I get a bunch of reels and from older lady actresses, and one of them is Susan Davis. And Susan Davis has been like the mom in War Games, and like, you know, she's been a bunch of Darren Boozman stuff. So she's like, she's used to horror. She's, you know, an old pro. And so I get this reel of hers, and at the end of it, there's a phone number, and I call the phone number and she picks up the phone. I'm thinking it's an agent or manager, but it's her. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, this is highly inappropriate, but I'm going to pitch you the movie and I'm going to pitch you us. So we did that. And she, by the end of it, she's like, I've never been in a cult movie before. And I was like, great. And she's like, this is at 9:30 in the morning. By 11:30 a.m., we've signed her. So that's one thing.
Good. That's awesome.
The last part of the story is that we're sitting there in Barney's Beanery. You probably see a pattern here. And we're just like pulling our hair out as to what we can do to get this last person. And so finally we get a call. Like, we're calling everyone. We're calling people, our friends at, like, you know, Jason Blum, like his head of post-production, to help us help CAA or ICM or these, like, you know, agencies stay open late. And because we were like, who would stay up late on a Friday for us, right?
Right. Yes.
At the end of the day, we get a call from Gersh, who was very instrumental in helping us with all of this. And we got the Brian character, Giles Mattia, said yes. What we found out later was he was driving down from San Francisco to LA, had to like pull over to the side of the road and then read the script like on his phone. And he just read his part and he said yes. And I was like, apparently this is quite common. Naomi tells me this. I thought, you should read the whole script. Don't you think they would? But no, they don't. Like, they just read their part just to make sure it's like not a porno or something.
He basically he found one scene he wanted to do. And he was like, oh, I like this scene. Oh, sure, I'll do it.
Honestly, that's why Andy Kaufman's character, Tony Clifton, was so dead on when he's reading the script. He's like, bullshit, bullshit, my line, bullshit, bullshit.
My line, no, that's every actor.
That is
not real actors, right, Naomi? Us truly talented actors. We ever do that.
Half the time, we don't even get the full script. I mean, seriously, you know, like, even for American Horror Story, I remember, like, for that entire season two, I only got the pages that I was in. So,
well,
you know,
they always do that with like the high profile shit where it's just like you get like, it's like not even a scene from the movie. It's like you play like a person named like Roy and you just kind of say your lines. So you have no clue what the scene is or what your character is supposed to be.
And again, that's Naomi Grossman, who played Pepper in American Horror Story. So I'm sure you all remember that unbelievable transformation.
Thank you. But I'm just saying, like, look, you at least gave him the script. Like, a lot of times they don't even give you that. So, you know,
kudos.
I would say shame on Giles, but I've totally done that a million times. Just like, make sure it's not a porno. And like, yeah, sure. Okay.
Oh my God. Yeah, exactly. What is this Red Shoe Diaries reboot?
My OnlyFans.
That's my business. You're cutting on my money.
David, so this is like a huge opportunity for you. You're directing, you wrote this, this is your baby, and all of this stuff is happening. I mean, what was your thought process when you're like, oh, what was that? We're out three of the main actors 3 days before we shoot. How did you deal with that?
I mean, the only saving grace of it is that by that point, I was so dead inside from the pre-production process. Like, this was the worst pre-production I've ever been through. Sorry, Alok. It was awful. I was so ground down. Like, I'm a really, are we allowed to swear on this?
Oh, of course.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yes.
So I'm a very mild person. I don't know if I've ever told you this, Alok, but there one point during the pre-production, like I am a conflict averse person. I don't get angry. I don't have a temper. I'm very even tempered.
Wow. You're the opposite of every director I've ever heard about. I love that.
Just wait. So by the time we're like, you know, a month out in this pre-production process, I found myself standing outside of a coffee shop, talking to one of the producers, hearing about what another producer had just done, and screaming into the phone, fuck him, fuck him, fuck him.
You broke.
And like, even as I was doing it, I was like, what? Who have I become? Like,
am I Jeremy Piven?
Yeah. So like, by the time this happened, I was like a husk of my former self. And I mean, God, I honestly, like, I thought it was over. Like, I, you know, when, wow, when 3 days before you're supposed to shoot, your lead actress is out, I was like, we lost, like, it's not, wow, happening. And, you know, so then by the time, you know, when they pulled it back together, like by the time that happened, it, you know, it's like a couple days before we shoot. And I have to say, like, you know, as grueling as a 15-day production is for a feature, like, I've rarely been happier than when I stepped on set that first day and knew, wow, that like this pre-production was over. And now, like, sink or swim, we were actually making the movie.
It's interesting. It's sort of like when you, wow, paint your apartment, and it's really about all the tape work you have to do before the painting. Yes. And the painting is kind of fun.
The painting is the fun part.
Yeah.
Naomi, I wanted to ask you a question. How, cause the idea of moving from, cause I feel like every actor wants to do, like, it's fun to be on a big old TV show, right? Because it's all the frills, the nice catering.
You're just talking about the food, Henry.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
But then you do an indie film for the love. And how does it feel on the inside?
So what's the difference between being fed on set and being starving on set?
Ah, that's funny. No, I mean, obviously the difference is money. Duh.
Yeah,
And actually, I will say they paid me in food for this movie.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, I didn't have the benefit of having like a fat suit and, you know, so I had to, you know, curb my eating a little, unlike, you know, other things I've done. But no, yeah. I mean, but listen, it was an indie low budget movie. I mean, Alok's mom was bringing in Indian food.
I love that though. I miss making movies.
Well, because there's something also super adorable and super, like, the fact that your mom is bringing Indian food for the crew and stuff. There's something super, like, homey about it.
The whole thing was such a family production. I mean, Alok's nephew is in it. My parents are in it.
That's
everybody
awesome.
We knew, because we didn't have any money for extras. And, like, you know, here's a hot tip. If you're making a super low budget movie, don't cast it in an apartment complex where you need like hundreds of extras roaming around.
Oh yeah. It's really, then you have to like shift the same. It's like you get like 15, 20 people and you have to like shift them and put different hats on them and like different scarves.
And, you know, if you find free people, you got to feed them all. So it's all just expensive. But yeah, it's like all my friends and my family are in this movie.
That's awesome.
My mom is the only one who's not. She was in town as well when we shot, because we shot twice, once over Christmas because they could get us cheap then.
Oh, yeah.
And then again, they brought us back during the Emmys, which I happened to be nominated that year. And that was they had to shoot that day. There was not another single day because the only way they got me is because they said that they squandered me. They realized now, you know, the error of their ways. This movie needed to be about Janice the whole time. What were we thinking? So they got me back. But anyway, so my mom was around. She was the only person on set that never made it in the movie. And the only reason is that she looked just like Mrs. Stanhope. Like, they just killed Miss Stanhope. They can't have another one like running around, you know?
That's awesome. And Naomi Grossman, she was nominated for a Primetime Emmy for Outstanding Actress in a Short Form Comedy or Drama for her role in Control Alt Delete. So congratulations for that.
That's cool.
That's really awesome.
I missed out on like a gifting suite here or there, you know, but it was worth it. It was the love.
Everything the is, if it's not for the love, then it's not for good reasons.
Cult horror travels farther than any other genre. Like, I just truly believe it every single time. Like, because there's something about a cult horror movie that I don't know. For me, I like fall in love with the cast even more, and I fall in love with the movie even more. There's something about it kind of like rising from the
it's like the really, Bad News
it's
Bears.
It's a creative thing. Yeah,
and you're not supposed to succeed. Hollywood doesn't want you to succeed. No one wants you to succeed. So when you do it, you're just like, I did it. We did it together as a team.
I just love it. That's why I think cult horrors are that we talk about on the show all the time. Indie horror is literally the last bastion of like real creativity.
It's
in
the
film.
Best. Alok, as a producer, how many lies have you told?
I mean,
how many lies do you think you have to tell every day?
If you're a good producer, then every third word out of your mouth.
Alok's joking about this, but I will say this: like Alok and I had. We were like this for a good chunk of pre-production and probably some of production and maybe even some of post-production.
Because we're butting heads a little bit.
Yeah, there were like we were driving each other crazy, but like I will say this, like the fights we had were always creative.
Yeah.
It was always about us both wanting to make the best movie we could. Like Alok has believed in this movie and Shane Vorster, the other lead producer. I mean, the whole producing team was awesome. But like Alok it just has such passion for this, and to have that on your team, I really came to appreciate. And beyond that, the other thing I thought about, even at the darkest moments, I was like, Alok has never lied to me. Like if Alok says something's going to happen, it'll happen. If he says not going to happen, it's not going to happen. Like he is honest and he wants to make a great movie and that's all it is. And like, you know, that I think is a rare commodity.
Absolutely.
I would say it's not that he lied to me when he said they squandered me, because they squandered me. Okay, that was not a lie. But obviously, that's not why they wanted me back. They just needed continuity.
We gave you a whole new scene.
They gave you a whole new scene. Oh my God. No. Can I just say,
Naomi Grossman and I have been friends for 20 years, so she was, of course, going to come back.
No, of course. Listen, I don't think lying. Well, let's say he doesn't lie. He just doesn't always tell you everything.
That's lie by omission.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's
but I mean, like the
salesman. It's producing. That's producing.
But he kept the hot felon a secret until our premiere. He knew for a fact that was not only going to be very distracting for David, but like I probably wasn't even going to like get to set. You know what I mean?
Oh my
God. I probably needed to go take care of that.
You had to go bail him out.
That's actually true. We had 15 days to shoot and this like hot felon thing happened like day 8 or something. And so we just like made sure we didn't tell David, we didn't tell anybody. Only a couple people knew, and we just told everybody we're starting an hour late, and that's all we had to do because the lighting truck people came, you know, reloaded the truck to another truck, and then we got him. Only took us an hour. We didn't tell anybody. We told David at the wrap party, the first wrap party. We told him that, but we didn't tell any of the cast until the actual premiere at Fantasia Fest. And actually, if you want to see this whole thing with the hot felon and everything, it's actually on the Blu-ray/DVD.
Okay, so hell yeah.
It's worth the purchase, let me tell you.
I'm switching to all physical media.
I love tangible stuff too. I think we're all kind of reverting to that.
Man, what an unbelievable, it just fucking it gets you. When you want to make an indie film, it's almost like, why don't you just write a book?
You know,
I feel like maybe that's the new take. Maybe it's write a book, maybe paint a painting. You know what I mean? Because
it'll
then
be more
least,
peaceful that way. That's for damn sure.
Easier to do during COVID lockdown.
Yeah, for freaking sure. I know our hearts go out to everybody struggling right now in service or entertainment
especially, my goodness. I have a lot of people in Atlanta that are still making film during this time period, but because there's room to do it. And now my favorite new thing is to watch TV and spot the quarantine filmed commercials where none of them are in the same room. Like you can see the green screen lines being like, this was like, it's stuff where they have things where people with masks on that are not COVID masks. It's like other types of masks on being like, that's a way they hit it. I still feel it though. I feel the tension.
We are speaking with the we are just speaking with a massive talent here. David Marmor, he is the director and writer of 1BR, One Bedroom. Naomi Grossman, she plays Janice. And of course, Alok Mishra, he is the producer. So thank you all so much.
Are we going to get it to BR?
You know, we can't. We
Chronicles of Janice.
They just finished crying over 1BR.
You squandered me.
They did squander you.
Let's just say this. We always try to J.J. Abrams the shit out of everything, or we don't tell you shit. You know, what's in the box? We'll tell you what's in the box. I will say this. There's a lot of interest in a sequel. We're going to make a sequel. We can't tell you anything about it, but that's incredible. It's going to be very interesting, and we'll see what comes out of the brain of David Marmor. That's sort of what's going to have to.
Dave, you got to fucking write the film.
Yeah, the work has just begun, and that's what no one understands about the entertainment industry. Getting success is the easy part, and then you have to really do more and more and more work. Otherwise, people are just going to think you failed. Isn't that nice?
Thank you, Kissel. Nice? Yeah, good work. Good work. These are all, these people are just trying to make projects, and you put the pressure on.
No, no more, David, don't cry. Please, no. Seriously, thank you all so much for being with us. We really appreciate you taking the time, and it has just been an honor to speak with you all. And best of luck to everything going forward. And please, whatever projects, Naomi or Alok or David, whatever you're working on, if it is not bedroom related, please come back on the show. Tell us what you're up to. Naomi, please send me your OnlyFans link. And Alok, if you're on OnlyFans as well, I mean, hey, let's do it.
That was a joke, by the way.
You gotta make money in the time of COVID somehow.
Oh, my God. Honestly, it is very funny to see how many of our friends are just like, oh, okay.
Hold on, man. I've seen so many kids from high school that I knew's buttholes in the last year. It's insane. It is wild.
It's the new working at Wendy's, just getting that OnlyFans gig, flipping a different kind of patty, I guess.
Seriously, we can't wait to have you. I hope you guys do make a sequel or whatever you guys make, because this was such a good outing into horror. And I think if you haven't seen the film, and you're listening to this, you should go see it. It's such a great, it's really good, especially good quarantine horror.
Oh, perfect. Awesome.
It's on Netflix. It's also now we just actually released in England on Sky. So it's like their version of HBO of sorts, right? So we're there. They can stream it there, or they can buy it online.
What's the best? Just for my own interest, what is the best thing? What's the best way for you? How do you? Is it best just to buy it tangible for you all, or how do you like? What's the best way for people to consume it?
How am I gonna get paid?
Yeah, how do we pay Naomi? Because honestly, we have to. We have to. You squander her.
It's better that you buy the digital copy. That's actually, we make more money off of that in comparison.
Let's bring Blu-ray back. I actually love that.
I love I think the physical media, because what I keep telling people is that if you buy it on iTunes, you don't own it. You get the opportunity to have it on your box, the Apple TV, but you don't own that film. They can take it from you. At any time. That's true.
Get off my lawn.
Get off my damn lawn, Apple.
Naomi, Alok, David, thank you so much for coming on, and check out this movie.
Live from your grave.
All right, there it was, our interview with the director, David Marmor, one of the stars, Naomi Grossman, and the producer, Alok Mishra, of 1BR. Check out this movie.
Great film.
Cult classic.
Great movie, and I miss making things.
I know, and they were like so unbelievably, for a producer, a director, and an actress, those conversations can go anyway. And were just so unbelievably cool.
Yeah, they're very funny. And I also like, what I like about indie filmmaking specifically is that it's deeply humbling. It's this thing, you get into it, and as you're making the movie, you really have to want to make that movie. You have to want to tell. And so you can really see that in 1BR. You could see that they were really excited about this movie, and they put a lot of passion into it.
And that's really when, like, the award shows and stuff like that, that's when they matter, when you know those people went through hell and back just to have one night where they can dress up and maybe get something. Like, that's the whole point. But, of course, a lot of these big celebrities, they're always living high on the hog.
They're always living high on the hog, these guys.
Oh, my. Well, thank
Jesus
you all.
Christ.
Thank you all so much for giving to our Patreon. Again, yes. Thank you so much for sticking with us. This whole year has been something. So thank you all.
Yeah, it's been fucking something.
I'm going to say the word, it's been something. Hail yourselves, everyone.
Hail Satan. Thank you for your money.
Thank you so much. Magustalations.
See you soon. to your house.
Don't come to your fucking house.
I'm gonna come over to your house. I'm gonna meet your parents. I'm gonna meet your dad. I want to meet your dead kids.
What a romantic.